from CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, this is UBC Arts on Air. I'm your host, Ira Nadell. Each week, we feature the ideas and stories of students and staff within the Faculty of Arts at the University of British Columbia. Today, at the start of UBC's centenary year, our guest is Professor Herbert Rosengarten, former head of the Department of English and former executive director of the President's Office, but perhaps best known as the co-author with Eric Damer of UBC, The First 100 Years. It's wonderful to have you on the show, Herbert.
Thank you very much, Ara.
Now, I know you've been involved with a number of projects regarding the history of UBC. I'm thinking of the Legacy Project, where you interview faculty and administrators and create a video library, and you've even written a history of the Department of English. What has led you to take such an interest in the history of UBC? And don't start by telling me how many years you've been here.
Yes, I'm a part of the history of UBC. Well, that's partly true, though, because the longer I've been a member of the university, the more interested I've become in its workings and in its past, how it got to where it is today. So it was a kind of natural outgrowth of my involvement both as a teacher and as an administrator, just to understand just how UBC came to be the kind of university it is today.
Do you find that most people are unaware of its past? If we go about the campus, and I'm thinking now more people who have been here 15 years, 20 years, you know, both faculty and administrators, do you find people are conscious of the past of UBC?
More and more they are. Maybe perhaps because in recent years we have been promoting that past as we approach the centennial. You have to remember this is our second centennial because we celebrated the first in 2008, and that was to commemorate the centenary of our charter, which was handed to us in 1908. So from that point onwards, I think preparing for the centenary of 1915, we've been talking more and more about UBC history.
What about the public? Do you think the public is, broadly speaking, conscious that even UBC has such a wonderful and long history?
That's a good question. I think a lot of people in Vancouver particularly are aware of UBC and aware that it's been a force in higher education for a long time, but as a kind of site of historical action and event, no, not really. And no should they be particularly. I think it's of interest to us in historical terms because for those of us who work here, we're interested in seeing exactly what the mechanisms were, what the achievements were that led to where we are now.
So I want to know, from the perspective of an author of the most recent history of UBC, what were some of the major challenges in writing a new history of UBC? I mean, in 1958, you had the Harry Logan, you know, Tuum Est, A History of the University of British Columbia. You've titled your account, which came out a few years ago, UBC, The First 100 Years. But what were some of the challenges in writing a new history?
Well, you've named one of them. The Harry Logan book, Tuum Est, is a very good first 50-year history. And I think what we needed to do was to cover the same ground without duplicating what Harry Logan had done. And I have to hand it to Eric Damer. He was primarily responsible for that. He did a fantastic job, I think, in looking back over those first 50 years, using many of the same materials, but seeing them from a much different perspective and presenting them in a way that would be much more interesting, I think, to a contemporary audience. So that was a challenge in itself. But then I think from the mid-50s onwards, there was more and more material. As the university got bigger, there were more and more documentary sources that had to be consulted. And I think what we had to do was to try to sort out and prioritize those issues and events that needed to be covered. So the challenge perhaps was to bring everything together in a way that made sense, that included the things that were really important, but left out those perhaps maybe of interest in themselves, but not necessarily relevant to a general overview of the university's history.
Well, that leads me to ask you, what do you think were some of the key administrative decisions that led to establishing UBC and UBC at Point Grey? Because, of course, we didn't start here. We started at the location of Vancouver General Hospital.
Well, I guess the first decision was to establish a university, and that really began in the 1890s. As the province began to grow, people in the province, particularly those involved with its government and administration, saw a growing need for higher education in the province. If you wanted to be educated in British Columbia, you had to leave British Columbia. So a movement began with an attempt to establish a university around 1890, and there was in fact a University Act then. But it died on the books pretty well, and it wasn't really revived until the early 20th century with the passing of the Act in 1908. But there was a great deal of interest in creating post-secondary education, and initially what happened was that the young people of British Columbia enrolled in programs that were handled by McGill University. And so the first institution of higher education in BC was McGill University College of British Columbia. And that's what was in place until the university itself, UBC itself, could be created. Money had to be found, land had to be found. And as you said, Point Grey was the land that was chosen eventually. Building started in 1913, 1914. And then, of course, the war broke out.
Now, isn't there a paradox or curiosity that the first year of UBC officially, formally, 1915, was also a year of graduating students as well as first-year students, or did I have that wrong?
No, well, the first UBC students graduated in 1916, and it was, I think, that was a hangover from McGill University College. There were students who entered UBC in 1915 who'd taken first and second year at McGill University College. Before 1915, in order to complete their degrees, they had to go somewhere else, usually to McGill. But after 1915, they could stay here. And in 1916, we actually graduated our first UBC degree candidates.
Now, that's what I call a very speedy program.
Yes.
Do you have any idea how many students? Well, let's start with how many enrolled the first year?
I think it was something like 379 students enrolled in the first year. How many graduated in that in 1916? I'm afraid I can't remember.
Okay.
That's a number that's
Well, we've grown,
me.
Certainly,
yes.
From 375. What do you estimate the current enrollment to be? Both campuses, UBC Okanagan and...
It's approaching 60,000, both campuses, yes.
That's phenomenal.
I know.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Why, when you start... Never mind. Let's talk about not really branding, but the image of UBC. I mean, quite literally, the UBC crest.
Yes.
Now, it's changed from its original conception. I believe there was an open book as kind of the top image, and now we have something completely different. Can you speak to that?
Well, we began with a coat of arms.
Yes, right. Thank you.
And it was a coat of arms that was devised by our first president, who was inspired by the kinds of university coats of arms that he'd seen in European, particularly, I think, British universities. And his first idea of a coat of arms was one very similar to what we still have, which is the sun rising over the ocean, you know, and a book and the motto, Tuum Est. And that became UBC's crest and motto for many, many years. We still see it in a kind of stylized form, not the same, quite the same detail as it was when it was originally conceived. Sadly, I think it's beginning to disappear. Certainly the motto is disappearing, Tuum Est. Universities don't like Latin mottos anymore, primarily, I think, because they feel it's not appealing to a younger generation. I think myself that students, our students, would like to see Tuum Est. You know, if you explain what it's about, what it means, it is yours, they would immediately see its application and relevance to them. So I would like to see that restored to its former eminence, but alas...
Well, you may be starting a movement, you know.
Well, that would be nice, but...
After 100 years, you know, we recircle.
But perhaps.
Yeah. Now, did you ever study history in university?
No, I didn't. I was a student of English literature. That is when I was studying at all. It was English literature. And I went on to do my graduate work in English as well.
Oh, you did a lot of work on the Brontes, I know.
Yes, and for my sins, I'm still doing a lot of work on the Brontes.
Well, yes, so how did the Brontes prepare you and help you for writing university histories?
Not at all.
I thought you were going to say that. All right, exactly. Okay, so looking at the centenary today and the events that are officially beginning on September 30th, what should UBC be celebrating? What, in your mind? I mean, unofficially, officially, What do you see as the great moments or plateaus?
I don't think you can pick one out. Your producer, Daisy, called me when we were preparing for this and asked me that question. And at the time, I couldn't answer, and I thought, well, I'll think about it. But thinking about it made me realize that it would be a mistake to single out particular events. There have been a whole lot of things in a whole lot of areas, depending upon what you feel should take priority. So there are many academic things that, you know, the installation of the first Van Graaff generator, the idea that UBC was joining those universities that were at the forefront of scientific research, the installation of Triumph, the cyclotron that has made us one of the leading scientific research places in the world. I mean, there are many moments like that that you can single out. I think it depends in part upon each person's discipline, each person's interests, where you focus that concern, and what you would choose. So I don't know, what would you choose?
Oh, that's really difficult to answer. You know, but as a partial response, I think there are a lot of, I don't want to call them secrets, but unexplored corners of the university that the public generally, and even students and faculty members, aren't aware of, like the cyclotron, because it's not in the middle of Main Mall. Yeah. It has its own location, or NSERC, you know, research centers, or developments that are happening at UBC Okanagan. Yeah. So in a way, when people say explore UBC, it's much more than what you see when you just arrive on campus. It's much more than the Chan Center. So I think we could highlight those kinds of the unknown UBC, if that's a way of describing it. You know, something like the shake table, right, where they study earthquakes. I didn't know about the shake table. This is fascinating stuff.
Well, that's actually had more prominence perhaps than people realize, because we used to have open houses, you remember? And the shake table was the most attractive, the biggest attraction that would bring crowds of people from outside UBC to actually stand on the shake
table. Well, that's rattle and roll. Rattle and roll goes back to Bill Haley and the Comets.
I mean, I don't recall them graduating from this campus, but
probably
still,
not. No. Probably not. What do you think will be some of the highlights 100 years from now? Let's assume we are having this conversation, but 100 years from now, do you have any inclination or inkling what might be discussed then?
How we lasted that 100 years might be one of the topics
for
conversation.
Well, that's given, of course.
I think it's hard to, it's always hard to look into the future. UBC will undoubtedly grow, continue to grow as it's growing now. It will continue to respond to the needs of the community that it serves. I mean, it is one of the great public universities, and I think it's very conscious of the responsibilities it has in that regard. So as a center of culture, of research, of learning and discovery, it's going to continue along that path. Particularly, I suspect, in the STEM subjects. I think we're very strong there. And in areas like medicine and the pharmaceutical sciences, I suspect UBC is going to be at the forefront of discovery. So we've already had some Nobel Prize winners here, 6 or 7. I think we're going to have twice as many by the time the next century rolls around. So I'm very optimistic about UBC's future here.
It's a juggling act in the sense that we have so many strengths. It's you want to balance, right? And you want to be able to both project the strengths in this particular field, whether it's the science side or whether it's the humanities and the art side. I would think that, you know, we want to celebrate it all, but certainly there are going to be certain things that stand out. Someone who writes a super award-winning historical book versus some new discoveries that are taking place, say, through electrical engineering. So I see this is a bit of a challenge.
It is. It's particularly hard for the humanities, I think, because great things happen here, and we have some wonderful people in the humanities, and especially in the creative and performing arts, but they don't get the kind of recognition that the people in the sciences do. And I don't know what that means. It's not that the university doesn't try to highlight their achievements, but I suspect that outside the university there isn't that community of interest that there should be. And perhaps that's our own fault, that we haven't somehow given them our culture, our heritage, the kind of prominence through higher education that it should be given. But as you know, the emphasis on the humanities has been decreasing in recent years, not increasing, and that's a real challenge.
I like your phrase, great things happen here. I think that's a very nice line. So maybe 100 years from now, they'll be using that.
Well, it won't be you or me.
What's the next history you're going to be writing?
Probably my obituary.
No, I don't believe that for a second.
I don't think I'm going to be occupied in writing a major history. I'm still interested in working in literature and still involved in doing research there. So probably if I have time to do more work, that's where I'll go.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. To our guest today, the bon vivant and historian, Professor Herbert Rosengarten. Thank you, Herbert, for joining us on UBC Arts on Air. And stay tuned for future guests who will reveal many of the talents of the diverse and energetic Faculty of Arts. Thank you again, Herbert.
You're very welcome. Thank you.